Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for July 12th, 2015. I'm your host, back from a two-week hiatus. I'm glad to be back on the Kudzu Vine, and on a one-week hiatus for the entire show. Welcome back, Catherine Smith.
Welcome. It's nice to have you back, David.
Glad to be here, and welcome, Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir, and I don't really care if you came back or not.
I knew he was going
to
say.
Well, glad to be here anyway, even with that kind of love. Yeah, we took a little holiday break, 4th of July, summer. I guess, you know, like a fiscal year, this is, I guess we'll restart hard for the fall and winter months, continuing on. Well, great show tonight. Our guest at about 7:20 is scheduled to be Ms. Charlotte Pritt, former member of the House of Representatives and the State Senate in West Virginia, also was the Democratic nominee, I believe, in 96 for governor of West Virginia. She's going to be our guest to tell us about West Virginia politics, also about the Mountain Party, which she's chairing, I believe, right now. And so just glad to have her. Thanks to her cousin Drew Pritt, who's our Arkansas correspondent, helping us line this up. And Catherine and Tim, I don't know if y'all know this, but with Ms. Pritt coming on later, that will give us kind of a correspondent, if you will, in every southern state that we kind of cover and talk to. I'm just glad to finally get there, aren't y'all?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah, so we'll be talking soon about that. Well, in the meantime, you know, I took 2 weeks off, and it just built and built and built, and I guess about Thursday, Friday, it seemed to build a crescendo. Donald Trump, the latest poll has him pretty much tied with Jeb Bush. He's getting all the attention. People that don't even like him in the field, they talk about him. He's, you know, the focal point. Catherine, how do you think he got here?
Oh, I don't know. I am just, you know, sort of constantly amazed at this ticket that they've got, or this, you know, set of potential candidates they've got. I mean, he just cannot speak without, you know, sticking his foot down his throat, but people are loving it, and it's beyond me. I mean, I don't know how he got there.
Yeah,
because he's a star, I guess. I guess it's because he's a star. He's a celebrity. So, you know, he garners attention.
Yeah. You said ticket inadvertently, Catherine, but it's kind of funny you mentioned that, because you have to wonder, if you were to get the nomination, would it be Ivanka or Don Jr. or Eric? You know, which one of the Trump children would get the nod, since everything he does seems to be a promotional vehicle for that crowd? Well, Tim, what do you make all this?
Well, I guess he wants everybody. I'm not going to say it. No. I started to say he wants everybody to come over to his side, but I'm not going to do that. That's silly. Trump, you know, as many have done in the past, he's experiencing a jump in the polls when he gets in the race. That coupled with the bombastic statements he's making, get him a few lines on the news and get him noticed. Let's see where he is, I don't know, a month from now. You know, 4 years ago, he kind of did this and just suddenly flamed out. That's what I'm really going to predict for him this time around. But you know what would be amusing, guys, if this rumor came to fruition, that he ran on the third party line. but you know, whatever vote he got there would just about all come from the GOP side of things. And
yeah, you'd have to think so.
Yeah, I see no way this man can possibly stay in the top tier of candidates. I just don't see it.
Yeah, it's going to hurt somebody. I wonder if he hurts like a Rand Paul. You know, he don't think he would hurt the Christian conservative candidates.
David, you're in and out. You're dropping out.
Well, Catherine, did you hear that question? I mean, who do you think he hurts that could be in the top tier in the field in the while he's there?
Oh, that's a really good question. I hadn't thought about that. Well, I agree with Tim. I don't think he's going to stay in that top 10 for very long.
Well, he's number one or two right now. Top 10's one of them. He's one or two. He's up there. It'd be hard to knock him out of the top 10.
Oh, I don't think it'll be hard to knock him out of the top 10. I mean, I don't think it'll be hard. I mean, someone's going to, you know, like Tim said, he's the new shiny object everybody's attracted to right now. But when people start to, you know, really listen to, well, maybe they won't. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know who he hurts. I have to think about that. I'm not sure.
Well,
I guess the Rand Paul, Scott Walker.
Yeah,
The more, I mean, how I can't believe I'm saying this, but the less crazy of the bunch.
Yeah, it's just going to be interesting because he has that little Tea Party element, but I don't think he has that, you know, Christian conservative element to him. So it's just hard to see, you know, where is he cut? There's not a Tom Crato, I forgot his last name. But, you know, a real anti-immigrant type character this time, and he's filling that spot. But, I mean, those are the people that he cut into. And I just do think if pretty much the first poll or whenever they do the polls and they set that in stone and have that first debate with the top 10 in the debate, I think it may set where 9 of those people, of those 10, may be in every debate from then on until – maybe some start to drop out in some other debate, the under ones that may somehow stay in the race then get lifted up. But it seems like if you don't make it into that first debate, then the die may be cast and there's no way to fall in or out of that. Do you think that could happen, Tim?
It could, but I tell you, I think Lindsey Graham was right what he said today. Donald Trump hurts the whole GOP brand. Here is a party who desperately needs to expand its base. They've lost the popular vote in 5 of the last 6 presidential elections. They are not appealing to Hispanics at all. Their presidential candidate lost the Hispanic vote in 2012 by 44 points. And they're going to have to do something about this, but it's going to be hard for them to win this field. In past years, these types of people winned themselves out of the race before it got started. But remember, we're in a post-Citizens United ruling era now. If you've got some rich mega donor, and Trump, let's face it, could probably finance his own campaign. If you have one rich mega donor backing your candidacy, you can stay in the race. And we're talking between 15 and 20 people. A guy like Trump is polling well because he's getting noticed out of that huge throng of people by saying controversial things. It gets him free airtime on television, and it also appeals to the, you know, the anti-immigration crowd out there, and there's a good many of them. But as far as nominating him or getting him anywhere near, I just can't see it, David. I'd love to think that this guy would be the nominee, but it's just I can't see it. I can't see at the end of the day that the voters will take this guy seriously.
Yeah, it was a disaster waiting to happen. I mean, we've seen the polling, the general election numbers, and he's so bombastic. But it's going to affect the race in some way. It's not like he can be this big figure in the race, and then the race turn out exactly like it would have without him. He's either going to move people to the right, or it's going to be a different nominee, even if it's not him.
I think
you're
right about
that. Butterfly ripple effect. Yeah, so it's just hard to know what that's going to be. And I think Jeb Bush is beginning to get worried that he could be the one that gets rippled out and somebody else gets rippled in, because he could make, you know, Jeb Bush wants to make inroads with the Hispanic community, and Trump could just poison the idea of Hispanic voters supporting GOP, or GOP voters even thinking that's important.
And there's another angle, too. Like I said, so many candidates in this race. How are you going to win at that field? They're about to enter a period where they have debates with each other for what, the next 6 months? It's going to be a carnival type atmosphere. I don't know how they're going to shake this thing out. We may be looking at a very protracted nomination fight, and they don't need a guy like Trump in there running his mouth while it's going on, because it's going to hurt the whole party. It is. You mark my word.
Yeah. Well, let's continue to talk about the presidential race since we're kind of on it. And this week, two different candidates made two different controversial statements. Let's handle Jeb Bush's controversial statement first. He said, you know, if we want to grow the economy, the best way to do it would be for Americans to work more hours. So that's the soundbite that's going to come out. Now, I have heard, if you look at the context, he was talking about underemployment, workers that maybe not working 40 hours and would like to, or maybe some people that work 40 but might be willing to work 45 for overtime. But that's not what's going to get covered, if you will. Catherine, did you see the quote, and what did you think of it?
Well, I just want to know, is employment a big word?
Because,
you know, that's the other thing he said, is that the president uses too many big words and is ruining our foreign policy because of it. But back to the working thing, I just think that's hilarious. Too many big words. Yeah, that's our problem. I think that was a, this is the thing. We're in a soundbite world, and, you know, these guys, everybody, every candidate in every office has to be really careful about how they string their words together. And he clearly is not paying attention. And, you know, his father had the same kind of problem. And his brother, well, you know, he couldn't string words together at all. But, I think that kind of statement does hurt him. I mean, even though it was taken out of context and all that, it's still, he said it, people should be willing to work more hours. And there's a lot of people in this country that are working 2-3 jobs to keep their families safe and fed and housed. And to hear a presidential candidate say you need to be working more hours does not resonate well with the lion's share of our citizens and voters.
Well, because some people don't want to work more. That they may thought they're working 50, 60 hours and would like to work less and actually get a pay increase. So it's all it's a situational thing, an anecdotal thing. Also, Catherine, I find it kind of funny that you mentioned that point about him saying big words, because really, Jeb Bush is seen as the intellectual of the three Bushes. So it's not like, I know somewhere in the Republican Party, they probably think, well, you know, we know that there's some folks in our party that really don't like intellectualism, but Jeb Bush, that's not a real good angle for him to play. Tim, that comment, what do you think of it?
I was thinking, can't you just see the commercials now? I mean, you put up this statement along with maybe what he said about raising the retirement age for Social Security. Follow it up with that. Then you show a collection of photos, Bush on his daddy's boat, Bush at the golf course, Bush at a fancy dinner with his brother, with his family, Bush living the good life, and then you top it off with saying, here's a guy who's born with a silver spoon in his mouth, and he's just out of touch with the needs of the average person in America. And you got a killer commercial, and he just made it happen. They can call it misstatement or whatever. You know what? I really think he believes stuff like that. I do. I've always thought a lot of those guys believe stuff like that. With productivity soaring in this country, the problem ain't what he said. Oh, no, the problem's stagnant wages. And that's what people are feeling. They're watching the rich get further and further ahead while they are just spinning their wheels in place. And then he says something like this. I don't know how ordinary citizens are going to identify with this guy. And that's just a terrible thing to say for a general election group of voters.
Yeah. It's just the fact that the Bush family's, you know, so identified with, you know, wealth and privilege, maybe more so than any other, you know, major political family in the country. And he's the one making this statement. There's Republican voters that don't necessarily want to, you know, work all these extra hours. And so he could alienate some folks. And then more importantly, this thing's going to get used with swing voters, you know, in the general election.
So, absolutely.
Just more bad news for him. And then as more candidates start to surge, I noticed in that poll that has Trump now leading, Chris Christie did quite well. And there's a more moderate seeming candidate that could cut into Bush's support. And I was really surprised to see him, you know, jump immediately into the top, say, four or five candidates. Did y'all notice that? And what did y'all make of that? Because I didn't think Christie would come out of the gates that fast. Did y'all? Catherine?
You know, the thing about Christie is I think that he's one of those guys that people can identify with. You know, they want to have a beer with him. They want to eat a pizza with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like the George Bush, George W. Bush, you know. So I'm not really that surprised by it, really. He doesn't seem to be as privileged as, like, Jeb Bush or Donald Trump. He's more of a – I mean, I hesitate to use this phrase, but he's more of a working-class candidate, I think.
Yeah, and New Jersey, obviously, he has to be, since that's not even really a swing state. I mean, that's pretty much a blue state at this point. And if
right.
people thought that, oh, he could win that state, I don't know that he could in the presidential election, or certainly do better in other states Republicans have trouble, that would help him. Although there's so much controversy and, you know, a lot of that negative Jersey politics has kind of stuck to him, too. Tim, Chris Christie, were you kind of surprised how well he started off the polls?
You know, I was a little bit. I thought he had flatlined almost, and some of the scandals and stuff that were attached to his administration were really going to hurt him. And I really think at the end of the day, Republican voters are going to remember how he embraced the president and walked around with him in that all that devastation right before the presidential election. They felt that essentially he knifed Mitt Romney in the back, and that's just unforgivable. And so I don't think Chris Christie's going to get the nomination, but I think Catherine's right. He kind of appeals as every man. I mean, look at the guy, right?
Yeah, definitely a different type of politician, certainly an appearance, if nothing else. Another controversial statement made this past week, this one more in the early week, and somehow it started off about, you know, gay marriage equality, which I'm not even sure how you even get to here, but Mike Huckabee said, you know, one of the problems, and I'm paraphrasing, one of the problems with marriage is that it's too concerned with emotions and love. And it was almost like he sounds like he thinks that, you know, marriage would work better if it were like a business arrangement. You know, you don't have a marriage ceremony. You sit down and sign a contract, much like a home loan. But I don't know that anybody's really wanting to get on board with the loveless marriage deal. I mean, to me, this of the two comments, this is more outside, you know, the box of thinking. Catherine, did you see the comments? And what did you think of Mike Huckabee's, you know, love and marriage
statement there.
I actually didn't see the comment. I tried to look for it, but I ran out of time before the show. But it is kind of crazy for a minister to say that, isn't it? I mean, isn't that like, I'm not a practicing Christian. I'm not a practicing religious person, but to me, like religion and the Bible and Jesus, a lot of it is all about love. And if you're going to sort of take love out of the, I mean, I don't think that marriage is all about love. I mean, there's a lot of compromise and a lot of work that has to go into making a marriage work. But if its base is not love, then what's the point, right? I mean, to me, as a, you know, unmarried woman, but I think it was an odd thing for him to say, and it probably wasn't what he meant, but that, again, it doesn't matter. You know, it's all about sound bites at this point, and he said it, and it's going to haunt him.
Yeah. Well, Tim, we'll have to get your thoughts on love and marriage a little later in the show, if possible, because right now our guest from West Virginia has called in. Welcome to the show, Miss Charlotte Fritt.
Well, it's good to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you. Miss Fritt, just start off, I know about your biography, and I kind of mentioned a few things early on, but tell the listeners about your history and politics in West Virginia.
Well, it's been a very interesting one in that I was a very progressive Democrat with my career there in West Virginia, but I came from a very conservative background. And it's interesting how that conservative background really has served me well in being able to understand both sides and to be able, I think, to forge coalitions. For example, I grew up on Buzzard Rock Mountain, which is a northern part of Kanawha County, where the capital city is basically in that particular county. But it has more conservative Republicans than any other part probably of the state. Baptized in the Poker River when I was 9 years old in a Union Valley Gospel Tabernacle, an evangelical kind of Baptist church. But it's interesting that when I was in the legislature, I was always very strong on separation of church and state. And even though I believed in the power of prayer and the miracle of prayer, I was very adamant about we needed to make certain we had our basic freedoms. Much like Karen Armstrong with her center of compassion that she's trying to get throughout the states. And it was interesting that my dad was a coal miner, but his IQ was like Mensa, like 160-something. So I knew that all working people could also be very, very bright Mensa people. You didn't have to be a college professor. I knew that even though I grew up in a very fundamentalist church where we didn't handle snakes, but you know, we got up and testified, and people were baptized as soon as they were saved, things like that, that you could have people who were sincere in their faith but needed good leaders. And so I had in my own family, my father's family were mostly Republicans, except my father and his older sister were, they were Yellow Dog Democrats, and the others were rabid Republicans. I grew up in an environment in which I knew there could be good people on both sides who had different views. And I think that served me well, you know, when I went on. And it helped in the sense that my former husband, you know, I ended up going to Marshall University and graduating in English, speech, journalism, German, and philosophy. But I got married after my sophomore year because my husband had been drafted, and I was a Marine Corps wife during the Vietnam War, which meant I understood that, but I'm a very strong pro-peace person. So I had opportunities as I was growing up to really understand both sides of the debate, and it's interesting to see how the same debate is really kind of going on now. I ended up when I was at the Marine Corps base in Albany, Georgia, integrating an all-black school, Albany State, and that was in the early 70s when I think I may have been the first white person to be a student there, and I was there for 2 years. They thought I was black. I thought they were like West Virginia State University here in Charleston, West Virginia, which is about 60% black and 40% white. So it was quite a shock. But I've always been really strong on civil rights. So it's been interesting how my background has led me to being able to make more compassionate decisions and helping me see, you know, how I can use that background and the knowledge I have to try to make the best decisions for the people of West Virginia. And I probably was also the only person that had a grandmother. We called her Mama in West Virginia, would call me, and she'd say, honey, did you vote with the Lord today? And I'd say, Mama, maybe I'm the only person down here actually does pray before I make a vote and ask God to help with that. With all that being said, I probably have the most progressive voting record in the history of West Virginia legislature. So I think there is hope for the division we have in our country today to bring us to the table and you know, both sides, all these different sides of the table, to work on issues that are really important to the people of our country. So with that being said, I ran for office. Didn't mean to, wasn't planning that I ran in 1985. I was down the Southern Coalfields teaching a graduate class on writing, and one of the teachers said, well, you know, this is all well and good, Charlotte, but what do you do when children are too hungry to think? And this was before Hands Across America, and I called my dad, and I said, Dad, we need to do something. The teachers are telling me the kids are hungry down here and down in Moore, West Virginia, and McDowell County, and if they're hungry here, they're probably hungry in Charleston. And we were always told that if you were in trouble, there were two places to go, the church and the Union Hall. So I asked Dad if he would get in touch with United Mine Workers of America and see if we could get something done down there. And I was going to talk to the local churches to see what we could do to help the children. And my dad convinced me that I need to run for office. And he said no one ever wins first time out, but because I've been a school teacher here in Charleston, and my students remembered me, and thank goodness they liked me, I won the first time out. And that was for the House. I served for 4 years, and I served for 4 years in the Senate. And then I was drafted to run for governor in 92 against an incumbent governor, insurance agent. And we had never been outside. We had never done a campaign before at all. I'd never run outside the county. And we almost won the first time out in the primary. Then I ran in 96, and that was quite a coup because I had this really progressive voting record. And Joe Manchin, Senator Joe Manchin now, who's probably one of the most conservative Democrats in the United States Senate, were running against each other in the 1996 primary. And our campaign went up against Alec and I don't know if the Koch brothers were involved in or not, but Alec and all the business people. But we had 10,000 volunteers in the campaign and a very, very good progressive voting record for the people of West Virginia. And we ended up being the first person, I was the first person to ever beat Joe Manchin. I still hold that distinction. And then the first woman to ever be nominated to represent one of the major parties in a gubernatorial race. So I share that with you because I do believe that we can do that again. I don't think that the progressive movement is dead. I think we just need to look at how we can make this happen again. We can go up against the money. We can go up Alec. We can go up against the Koch brothers. But we have to do it in such a way that that people believe in us and trust us.
Yes. Well, it kind of fits here since this was the bio when I was booking you for the show and telling you about the details. You mentioned the Mountain Party, and that's something I don't think every state of the union has a Mountain Party. Kind of tell our listeners what it is and how you came about being the first chair of it.
Okay. Well, actually, I wasn't the first chair, but it did come out of the Pritt campaign in 92. We lost that we lost the race in the primary. But we came so close that the people who had been empowered to help me in that race didn't want to stop because it was the first time some of the people in West Virginia had really participated. And the working people, you know, some of the state employees and teachers and people finally had someone they could trust. And we did a write-in campaign. and which garnered enough votes in a write-in campaign to actually be able to create a third party. Now, at that time, I decided not to because I was still staying with the Democratic Party because my hopes were there and my affiliations and my loyalties have always been to the Democratic Party. But in 2012 when U.S. Senator Joe Manchin and Earl Wade Tomlin were trashing President Obama and saying and not willing to help him, that I decided that was it. I'd had enough of the kind of betrayal of the Democratic Party values by our party leaders, and I decided that I was going to go ahead and go to the Mountain Party, which had been created later by Denise Giardini running and getting the votes that we needed. I can't recall now who our first party chair was, but then I came over. They said, Charlotte, we need you. That we don't have the progressive movement, and there was no one. The Democratic Party in West Virginia has turned its back on all the progressive candidates. Will you please come over and help us keep the progressive movement alive? And I said yes. I came over, and I realized there was no hope while Joe Manchin was still in charge of the Democratic Party here for us to be able to have a progressive movement within the party. So I went to the Mountain Party. Now, the Mountain Party was started, as I said, by those people who were in the Prick campaign in 1982. But Denise Giardini, a fabulous novelist and writer and Episcopal priest, was, the first person to run for governor. And then we've had Jesse Johnson and Bob Henry Baber, who are excellent. They're artists as well, brilliant people who run for governor and been our candidates. I came over as party chair in 2012. To really move the party forward and help, you know, be able to establish to help progressives, whether they were Republican, Democrats, or Mountain Party, if we were fielding candidates in those seats. It was really fascinating because what I discovered is that people, and I'm sure it's not just in West Virginia, but people throughout our country are hungry for politicians, for statespersons, for leadership that will really address the issues and not simply be owned by, in our state, extractive industries like fracking, oil and gas, and coal and timber. Now the worst is fracking, which is all over the United States. But they're hungry for it because what I found in the Mountain Party that Jesse Johnson was a former Republican. Bob Henry and I were former Liberal Democrats. Frank Young, former chair, was a Republican. We actually have had Tea Party Republicans and the most liberal Democrats, and some people that, you know, that would, others would say, well, you know, you're a socialist, but are not socialists, but we're liberal Democrats in the Mountain Party. And they're in the Mountain Party because we address the issues. It's not just about the label. And because we're really trying to do something not only about the environment, but what's happening with labor, what's happening. And so many of these, we were the first ones to come out with the LGBT and say we want to work with this, we want to work with fairness. We did editorials. We were some of the first ones to talk about health care for everyone. The Mountain Party candidates were the ones who were walking the talk that the Democrats used to walk, but were no longer talking or walking. So. And the Mountain Party, then the Green Party asked if they could be affiliated with us. We were already established and on the ballot. We have ballot access now, and so they asked if they could be affiliated with us. So they are affiliated, the Green Party of the United States is affiliated with the Mountain Party here in West Virginia.
Okay, well, that gives us some background. Well, I'm not the only host on the show. I'm going to pass along to Catherine. She'll ask some questions to pass along to Tim, and maybe to get it back around me, me. Catherine?
Thank you so much for being on with us tonight. It's fascinating to hear your story, and I really just would like to sit down and have a coffee with you sometime, but I'm far away.
Well, if you ever get to West Virginia, you're welcome.
Well, thank you. So how I'm curious about the Mountain Party and how you – is there a lot of tension between the Democrats, the Republicans, and the Mountain Party, or is it sort of like, well, you know, we've all got to work together because we need support from each other? Like, how does that work?
Well, it's really interesting. They're terrified of this, especially the Democrats. And this was, we've had to sue. We haven't been allowed to be in the televised debates, gubernatorial debates. They have been absolutely, both Republicans and Democrats, but some of the Democrats have been more worried about that because the Democrats and Republicans now in West Virginia, you can't tell the difference, and that's why the West Virginia legislature, which traditionally, West Virginia traditionally has been so Democratic, our legislature and our presidential campaigns. But since Joe Manchin, who is ALEC, I think he's the only Democrat senator that's a member of ALEC and was a former treasurer, he now is kind of the in charge of the Democratic Party here in West Virginia. And, well, he is. He controls that. And there's the Moore Manchin faction. This is a really important element to understand West Virginia politics. Joe Manchin, uncle A.J. Manchin, and Shelley Moore Capito's father, Arch Moore, were really good friends. They come from Fairmont, West Virginia, which is very near West Virginia University, that part of the state. And they formed early on an alliance. So you had Moore, who was Republican, and Manchin, who was Democrat. They formed an alliance, and it's just one party. Now, Joe, even though they've been aligned for many, many years, both A.J. Manchin's dead now and Arch Moore, but this alliance still continues, as we saw when Shelley won over Natalie Tennant, which should never have happened. But behind the scenes, there was the Manchin-Moore faction, so that Natalie really didn't have the help of the Democrats, nor have any of the progressive women who have run. We've had Sue Thorne, who ran in the 1st Congressional District, fabulous woman, good on all the issues, hard worker, especially working with children and labor. They wouldn't give her any money. They wouldn't help her at all. Virginia Graff, over in the Eastern Panhandle near D.C., fabulous woman, good on all the issues, choice. She has a background. She's also a minister, but pro-choice, all good on all the progressive issues. They wouldn't give her any money and help her, so the Republicans ended up winning. But so if you understand that in West Virginia, you really don't have two parties. You have the Manchin-Moore faction. And it's been very, very difficult for progressive Democrats because they've really bastardized the Democratic movement here, the progressive movement. And that's why the West Virginia legislature became Republican for the first time since, years and years and years, probably maybe the Civil War, who knows. I'm not really sure, but it's been years since we've had the control of the legislature has been Republican. And that's because there was no difference. Democrats didn't go out and vote. So both parties see, to a certain degree, some threat. Now, the Libertarian Party and the Constitution Party, and there's another party, they're pretty much like the offshoots of the Republican Party here in West Virginia. So the Mountain Party would be like an offshoot of the Democratic Party in the sense of that we really work for the environment, really, really work for unions, we really work on health care, we really work on making sure equal rights, civil rights, all of those issues that used to be a traditional Democrat. So what we see here is this really convoluted, to talk about politics in West Virginia, you're really talking about Manchin-Moore faction and then the Mountain Party. So the Mountain Party really is the party that represents the progressive Democrats and progressive people in West Virginia addressing these movements. So what they don't want is that what we do, our candidates do, is we get up to speak the truth about the situation. If the Democrats and Republicans are the only two allowed to debate, then they say basically the same thing. Right. And we saw that with Shelley Moore Capito and Natalie Tennant, the U.S. Senate candidate, Democratic candidate. Natalie, the Democrats in West Virginia now are afraid to espouse the Democratic issues. They're afraid because they're so controlled by the extractive industries, coal and the hydrofrackers. So the biggest thing they don't want people to know about our candidates, because our candidates are talking about issues. We're very issue oriented. So we have had lots of for example, the Democrats haven't fielded a candidate in years that's pro-choice. We almost lost the choice issue in the West Virginia legislature last year. So it's really a very challenging situation for progressive Democrats to have to live under this dark cloud of the Manchin-Moore faction here.
Well, thank you for holding up those values. It sounds like a huge challenge. And,
oh, it is. It is.
We all appreciate it. We all appreciate it across the country. I'm going to pass it on to Tim now for his questions. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Good evening, Ms. Pritt, and thank you for being on with us tonight. First of all, I've got to ask, if West Virginia somehow is a battleground in 2016, should we then assume that the Democratic nominee is cleaning house all the way across the country?
Now, here's what I think we need to think about. First of all, you need to think that the Manchin-Moore faction is in control. And that means Joe has always helped the Republican nominees for presidential since he's been in control. And that's been, Underwood was in during, when Al Gore, the election was stolen from Al Gore in 2000. And so he was working with Republicans. Then Joe started after I beat him in 96, then he created Democrats for Underwood, which was a Republican gubernatorial candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, we lost our presidential. You know, if I had been the governor, we would have taken, Al Gore would be president right now, because he would have had West Virginia. There's no doubt about it. We have a couple of things here in West Virginia, and it's probably true all over. We have voter machine fraud that's rampant here in West Virginia. My former husband, who was a federal prosecutor in the Southern District of West Virginia, sent the sitting governor, whom I served with both the sitting governor and our U.S. Senator Joe Manchin, Norway Tomlin, I served with both of them in the West Virginia Senate. But my former husband was a federal prosecutor, and he was a part of a team that sent the sitting governor, Earl Ray's governor, to prison for voter machine fraud way back in the 70s. And then Hutchins, he was actually running, and we had problems again in Kanawha County with voter machine fraud. That made some national news with allegations. And, of course, the machines we have now, I don't know if you all are familiar with black box voting with Bev Harris.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes. So yes. We've had a lot of people approach, and the Mountain Party has been doing some work with that, trying to work with individuals in different parts. So what we contend is that unless we have hand-counted paper ballots with observers in the poll, there's no way that we can really verify the integrity of the vote. And we think that if we were to go back to hand-counted paper ballots with observers in the polls, then West Virginia would return, and Wisconsin would return, and all the other states that have always been traditionally for the people of their states and the people of our country, for human rights, basic rights. We contend that if that were to happen, we would get back. We would be able to have, the people would have control again rather than corporatism and fascism.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, to answer that, I think it really depends on whether or not we can, each county by county and state by state, can insist on integrity of the vote and work on those issues, because I think that's the most crucial thing.
Okay.
The reason I say that, when in 96, Joe Manchin with Alec and Koch brothers and all these people outspent me 2-1, but our campaign had 10,000 volunteers and we beat him. So I don't really think it's the money so much as it is contending with these machines.
Of course, you've mentioned Senator Manchin several times, and he's been in the news lately for another reason. It was thought by a lot of people that he might want to step back into the arena in West Virginia, step away from Washington and run for governor. As we now know, he decided not to do that, which left the governor's race pretty much open. So what does a guy like Jim Justice, who I believe is the richest person in the state, if I'm not mistaken. How does he fit into this?
Well, he's handpicked by Joe. So I think Joe just decided, you know, politics, I always said it's spiritual boot camp and it's like playing chess at the same time. For those of us who were candidates and had served, it's you will never be tempted more in your life. So you really start finding out who you are as a person and, you know, where the temptations lie. But the other thing is, and this speaks to, it's Catherine, I think. Catherine, you were asking me about the mountain party a few minutes ago. So it also speaks, the chess part comes into any time there's a new, you know, someone makes a move, like the mountain party fields a candidate. Any time that happens, everybody, if you're really a chess player, you have to watch to see what's going on because you have to decide your next move on the move there. So Jim Justice, I've been heard, is simply, you know, he's just a puppet for Joe Manchin. So Joe probably figures he can control West Virginia politics and then also see what he can do up there. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Joe didn't at some point, unless the game plan is stay a Democrat and keep that control that. I think it would be better for West Virginia if Joe would go ahead and become a Republican because he does. I mean, if you look at his voting record, it's Republican, and he votes more with Republicans than any other Democrat in the Senate. So I think if he would just go Republican, then the Democrats would have an opportunity then to get back to our traditional values and have leadership that we could trust as far as Democratic values. But it's going to be real interesting, you know, to see what happens with Jim Justice. I've been hearing people talk about Justice, and what most people say, well, you know, we don't know if anybody else is going to run because he has the money. But Booth Goodwin, United States Attorney, Southern District of West Virginia, comes from a great family, the Goodwin family. He is an incredible young man, and I would make an incredible candidate for governor. Jeff Kessler, former president of the Senate, Democrat, also is progressive on a lot of issues, would make a good candidate. So the Democrats have people who would be people of integrity, but Jim Justice doesn't have any experience. He's a coal magnate. He made his money in coal and gambling. Yeah, well, not gambling, I shouldn't say. He's at the Greenbrier, but the Greenbrier has gambling now. So, you know, that's the same kind of input that Joe comes from that background as well, you know, coal. And so it's something to be very concerned about for people in West Virginia. But here's something also to consider what happens in West Virginia. There's a lot of trading off, and this may happen in other states as well, but people really want the gubernatorial position, and they will trade the presidential and the congressional seats, give that to Republicans so they can have Democrats, so Democrats can get positions in the government, because government is a big employer here. And this happened to Jim Humphreys, a great, wonderful progressive Democrat who should have won. When Shelley came in, he outspent Shelley, I forget how much, but they'd already made a deal. And the Democrats said, well, we'll take Bob Wise, and you all can have the presidential, and you can have the congressional. So it's going to be real interesting to see what kind of deals are being made. I think if we were to get back to hand-counted paper ballots with observers in the polls, then we could really get anyone should be able to feel free to run in the primaries and not be intimidated by this money.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. David?
Yes, well, Ms. Pritt, you mentioned governor's race and what have you, and you have a current governor, Earl Ray Tomlin, who's term limited. Now, he's talking about other politics, and that seems like a good way to segue into these three congressional districts in West Virginia. Is District 3 the most likely to flip to Democratic? Because all are Republican, for our listeners that didn't know. Or are there other districts, one or two, that could be just as likely to flip?
Well, I think they're just as likely to do. What we have in 2 is, of course, the Kanawha City. And 2 probably has the most urban. You have Charleston, and you have the Eastern Panhandle in 2. And that's probably the most well-versed, let us say. And I want to make distinctions. Just because you go to college doesn't mean you're intelligent. And working people can be extremely intelligent. But sometimes you have the luxury of having more time to read and get up to speed on things. And So we have in the first congressional district, people are trying to get Mike Menypenny to run. He's a wonderful Democrat. He will be fabulous. He's an organic farmer, right on all the issues. If he can make it through the primary, that will be the question. Mountain Party would love to have him come over and represent us in that congressional district. Dave McKinley is in that district now, and that was Mollahan's district, and he had a great deal of, he was there for a long, long time and had a lot of seniority, which West Virginia lost Bob Byrd and Mollahan, and we really lost a lot in being able to have an effect, you know, in the United States Congress. But so Mike Menypenny, I think, is the horse to bet on for making, you know, for really good stuff in West Virginia. Now, in the second congressional race, Ed Rabel, who was a war correspondent from West Virginia, was an independent, very independent. He ran as an independent. I don't know if Ed's thinking about running again. I think he would have a really good shot. Down in southern West Virginia, in the third, the reason we lost that is because Democrats are just talking like Republicans. See, we lost these seats because Democrats didn't go out to vote because they didn't have anyone to vote for. It just, it's like me or mini-me. And I'm just shocked. I mean, when I think about Elizabeth Warren and people saying, oh, apologizing for Elizabeth Warren, Elizabeth Warren is the bright spot in the Democratic Party. She is what Democrats have been looking for. Even Republican women will call me and say, what do you think about Elizabeth Warren? And I'll say, well, what do you think about Elizabeth Warren? They'll say, well, you know, she's brilliant. And she's speaking to the people. And I said, yeah, I think she's great. So I think all of these seats, but people are afraid to speak up. And it seems like Joe's been handpicking people to get through the, you know, Nick Casey, who ran, was anti-choice. He ran against, I forget, this guy coming in, Mooney, I think. Hardly anybody knew Mooney. I mean, how do these people, how do they even get it unless the machines or something's going on? It's not just the Democrats staying on, but I think there's a lot of hanky-panky going on. If my former husband had not prosecuted cases and won on this, way, even back in the 70s, I wouldn't be so suspicious. But I think Bev Harris at Black Box Voting is right on target. So, and again, we may have people from the Mountain Party fielding candidates to get the dialogue, to set the dialogue, set the agenda, to get the discussion going in the right place. I'm hoping that we will.
Yeah. Well, one final question I had for you, and that was kind of piggybacking on Tim's question about the presidential race. In 2008, when the primary came to West Virginia, Hillary Clinton beat Barack Obama by 40 points, probably her best state, you know, throughout that primary process. And West Virginia moved as hard from the Democratic to the Republican column. And that may have already been the Republican column, but moved even further, as much as any state from 2004 to 2008, didn't make a lot of progress in 2012. Is Hillary Clinton the kind of nominee that could move a good number of voters back to the Democratic column and help return West Virginia to some Democratic roots?
Actually, it's really this. You have to take into consideration all the things we talked about. Ryan Associates, who's in Washington, D.C. now, and it's really he, along with the Coal Association, started early on these horrible campaigns against Barack Obama. I mean, they had billboards up, no job zone, Barack Obama. It was such an outrageous assault on a candidate that it was sickening, actually. So you had the coal company, Coal Association, and the coal companies, with Ryan Associates out of D.C., just doing these horrible, horrible ads to just like the old propaganda thing. I don't know if you saw this, but there was a little clip that's going around, and it has Star Trek, and it has Fox News on, and they're saying 21st century mode of propaganda to lower IQs, to keep, you know, it was really funny, but they've been doing this incredible propaganda thing. So, and with Hillary, you see, Clinton was very popular here in West Virginia, and he was a progressive Democrat. So it was, Hillary kind of came through that, but what I'm hearing here, and it's going to be very interesting to find out how this plays out, I was talking to a Republican businessman, just last week who said, what do you think about Bernie Sanders? And I usually say, well, what do you think about Bernie Sanders? He said, I like him. I said, would you vote for him? He said, I sure would. So I think people are hungry for someone who is going to really take a strong stand, who is going to, and I don't know, you know, exactly what's going to happen with that. Even though we have, in West Virginia, we probably have more people per capita who've gone to, served in the military than any other state, we still have a strong Patriots for Peace movement here, people who are against going to war, who are against that, who believe in compromise, who are working, you know, for peace. So West Virginia, unless you are a West Virginian and understand the complexities of the state, it's really hard to make a simplistic answer like that. I think the more Manchin faction will be in there. You have people, on the other hand, many more people are becoming independents in this state. And this is a state in which you had to swear on your daddy's grave that you would not vote for, if you were a Democrat, you would never vote for a Republican until, it, you know, that as for your lifetime, and if you were a Republican, that you would never vote for a Democrat. So this state has been traditionally Democrat because of, you know, United Mine Workers, AFL-CIO, the Automobile Workers of America. Arthur Ruther came out of West Virginia. Cecil Roberts was a good friend of my dad's. He's from West Virginia, who's the president of International United Mine Workers. So what you're seeing since the Moore Manchin faction has taken over the Democratic Party is really not typical of who we are in West Virginia. It's kind of an aberration. It's an abnormality developed by Joe Manchin. So it'll be interesting to see, because the people of West Virginia are really, really hungry for good leadership, and I think that the Democratic progressive movement are especially hungry for it. So some people are criticizing, saying Hillary is not progressive enough. She's too much like, she's good on the choice issue, but if, and people are beginning now with the internet and guys like, you know, folks like you all, where they can start getting really good news. Amy Goodman's Democracy Now!, Nation of Change, Truth Digs, Daily Cause, you know, all of these where we can get the facts and not just propaganda. People are beginning to look at what's happening with Greece. What's happening? How did Gold Sachs get involved with all that? How do we create these problems in Europe? So now people are not being as diverted by some of the other issues, and they're starting to look at the financial situation. So it's going to be really interesting. I can't really say for sure now, because I think people are becoming more and more informed about what's happening, and they're ready to take some action. They've had just about enough, and I think the Republicans going, West Virginia Democrats losing the Republican the legislature to Republicans, has been a wake up call. So I think they're all looking at what do we do wrong, and we need to start talking and being more progressive and show that there's a difference. So what do you think? Do you think Hillary? What do you think? Is Hillary being? I mean, it seems here that Bernie Sanders is really picking up steam with both Democrats and Republicans and Mountain Party people.
The primary, we could spend a whole another hour on the primary race. My personal feeling is one statement we can make for progressive politics is to say that, you know, 51% of our population can hold the office of president, and in putting Hillary Clinton, a female, in that office would send such a message to so many people around the world, you know, girls and women in our own country. And I think that's mm-hmm. more important in a lot of ways than maybe somebody's a little more to the left on some issues like Bernie Sanders. I really believe if Hillary Clinton got passed over again, that there'd be a lot of disillusionment. Because we've talked about in our state of Georgia how women on both sides of the aisle have just never been successful, and how really that doesn't look good for our state. I don't think it looked good for our country. But we're going to pick that discussion up I don't know how many more times. But Ms. Pritt, we're at the end of the show, and we're so glad to have somebody of your expertise and somebody from West Virginia. I think we said earlier in the show you completed our roster of Southern state correspondents, and so as issues arise in West Virginia, we would love to call on you again to inform us.
Oh, I'm sure I will be more than glad to put my two cents worth in there. And I think it's wonderful what you are doing, and I applaud you, and I'm so grateful that you're there, allowing people to have an opportunity to speak about what they see happening in their state. So good luck to you, and can keep up the good work.
Same to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, David.
Good night, fellas.
Good night, everyone.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the long